There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at a world of grassroots, independent media, and our media environment. My name is Paul Reeson, and I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, Free Radio Camp. We'll be talking to Stephen Dunifer, the founder behind Free Radio Berkeley, which is now sponsoring radio camps, both in Berkeley and around the Western Hemisphere, for people to learn how to get into free radio. And of course, we'll get you up to date with what's going on in our media environment with Media Geek news headlines. Do stay tuned. So on today's program, we're going to start off the program talking with Stephen Dunifer, who should be on the line with us from Berkeley, California. Hello, Stephen.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Very well. And how are you?
I'm doing quite well here. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. And I guess the first thing I want to talk to you about here is that Free Radio Berkeley has planned a series of radio camps.
That's correct.
Can you tell us more about what this is?
Well, what the camps are basically a four-day intensive where we start people who, in many cases, don't have any experience at all, either in electronics or radio, and we guide them through a four-day process that, at the end, they can, if they so choose, walk away with an assembled series of kits that allow them to assemble, build a transmitter, and set up their own radio station, basically.
And this is for anyone, whether they've ever touched a soldering iron before or any sort of electronics?
For anybody. We assume, zero to none experience.
And as part of this, so you guide people through the building. Are there also issues about, do you do anything about legal issues regarding unlicensed broadcasting?
Sure. We cover all the legal issues, how people can approach it, what they should consider, different avenues, things like that. I mean, for example, one thing we deal with is what we call drive-by radio. I mean, if people do not want to do a fixed location, for example, which of course you could get more attention from doing usually, and even not in legal considerations, you have staffing issues and being on 24/7, finding a place, things like that. One very good way to get into doing free radio broadcasting is to actually just set up at an event, a flea market, a community fair, whatever it happens to be, on a weekend, and go on the air. You can set everything if you need on a small folding table, and be on the air within 15 or 20 minutes to set up at most, run a smaller transmitter off a car battery, and basically just go on the air right there at the event. Or if you have a labor action going on, there's a strike or some job action occurring, it's hard to hand a leaflet to a car going by 25 or 35 miles an hour, but you could put up a big banner saying, tune this frequency, and then as people drive by, they can tune their car radios to hear maybe a 2 or 3 minute, 5 minute program repeating itself on a MP3 player, CD player, whatever you got, set on auto repeat mode. So there are lots of innovative ways you can do this, without risking hardly the possibility of the SEC ever showing up at one of these type of endeavors is probably zero to none.
Well, I guess that's probably a question that comes to a lot of people's mind, and it's the risk, because if they've seen any sort of media portrayal of unlicensed radio, maybe it's in like a movie, like Pump the Volume, where they've watched, you know, herds of FCC, vans that say FCC on the sides, right, chasing, you know, Christian Slater in the back of a Jeep around around his city, right, as he's broadcasting
to
the masses.
Yeah, that's Hollywood for you.
Of course, so, he gets the girl.
Right. But so that doesn't really show up in reality quite that way?
No, hardly. First off, I mean, you know, it'd be nice if they had big, bright yellow vans instead of SEC on them to be, you know, easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what color they were. Actually, they use something like a, well, here they've had a use of a Chevy, big Chevy Suburban. They actually take the metal roof off and replace it with a plastic roof, which they have an antenna array buried in, and that one vehicle, then it can basically, with the equipment they have, they can get like a vector bearing of where, you know, the transmitter, you know, where the transmission is coming from, basically. But I mean, the thing is, you have to keep in mind is, I mean, the FCC, they don't even have the authority to carry any weapons. I mean, mm-hmm. their most deadly weapon is their clipboard. I mean, and yeah, it's all civil procedure, and there's no consistency in enforcement from field office to field office. And, of course, given the fact that the Bush junta is basically running the country on a $500 billion deficit, they don't have the funds to engage in major activities to begin with.
And so the FCC isn't roaming the countryside searching for unlicensed transmissions?
Well, I mean, they're so busy. I mean, they have to deal with everything from cell phones to, two-way radios and taxis to, all the established broadcast stations. There's just so many potentials of electromagnetic emission out there. It's mm-hmm. just, over the top, really, what you have to deal with. So, when things were a little more antagonistic with the corporate people, the NAB was enlisting their own people to track down and find unlicensed folks and report them, and that seems to have calmed down a bit in the years.
What about local police? I mean, if you set up at let's say a labor action, can the local cops bust
they
you?
They have no jurisdiction whatsoever. They have a hands-off attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like transmitter, hey. They don't have any problem usually.
Right. So the transmitters, which of the type that people can build at your radio camps, I mean, are these large behemoth things? Because I think most people, the picture they have in their head is, a large radio tower with, a room full of equipment.
Right. Well, no, it's actually a card table with a transmitter on it that's maybe 4x4, maybe 4x5 inches by 8 inches long. That's it, really. Then you have a small mixer, your CD tape players, and a battery to run everything on, and cable to run to the antenna, and mount the antenna on a piece of 2-inch PVC pipe, 10 to 15 feet long, stuck into a tripod mounting base.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you have a radio station.
And how much power are you talking about?
Well, anything. I mean, the transmitters we have go anywhere between 1 to 100 watts, and we have some of the 150, 300, but that's not usually. Usually, it's between 1 and 100.
Mm-hmm. And so, why does Free Radio Berkeley engage in helping people build transmitters? When instead, maybe they could be doing radio on the internet, internet broadcasting, or in some areas, people can get a low power FM license.
Well, I mean, all the above have severe limitations. I mean, of course, the limitation with the internet broadcasting is you're limited by the bandwidth. Every user you have equals bandwidth, and a lot of internet service providers that would be hosting your server to be feeding the stream basically charge for the bandwidth. So, I mean, like in our area, a 50-watt station has the potential of reaching, a potential audience of maybe, a 250,000 people. Now, if you had to pay for that much bandwidth, you wouldn't be able to afford it on, mm-hmm. on the internet. I don't I think there's a place for internet feeds, but certainly not within a community radio process. Mm-hmm. And the fact that radio is so ubiquitous, everyone has a radio, not everyone has access to a computer or the means to purchase one or even however it may be. I mean, it's only like with a $5 radio, you can buy it some discount place. You can you can hear what's going on. I mean, if people can go through the LPFM process, fine, more power to them, but you have to deal with filing windows, and the FCC does not have the staff right now to process the applications it's already received properly, because several hundred bogus applications were put in by these religious organizations that have a very hegemonic attitude about the whole process.
Yeah, we've been following that here on Media Geek.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of issues. It's just, I mean, as Bob Dylan said, if you're going to live outside the law, you got to be honest. it's really, you have less restriction, particularly now with the FCC wanting to levy, $500,000 fine on people for obscenity. That's a bigger fine you get if you had an accident in a nuclear power plant and NRC fined you. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
And how long has Free Radio Berkeley been holding these radio camps?
Oh, it's been about a year now. We decided to start holding the camps.
And how many participants have you seen, roughly?
Well, we've had about 5 or 6 camps so far, and average of 8 to 10 people a camp, so roughly 50, I guess.
And this has been mostly in the Berkeley area?
Berkeley, you mean California? In terms of attendees?
Or where you've been holding the camps, I guess, yeah.
We've been holding them in the Berkeley area. However, next month we'll be holding one in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
For folks that are in the more or less in the area of the Midwest who want to attend, that's going to be held April 22nd through the 25th in Madison. And we will probably be doing one in the Northwest and probably Olympia. We might be doing one back east, maybe in Massachusetts in August. I'm not sure yet at the moment. Maybe as part of the at the end of the Grassroots Radio Conference, and when it ends, we might do our camp there. And we'll probably be doing some outside the country, in Mexico and Brazil, later in the year as well.
And in places like Mexico and Brazil, is broadcasting with a license more of a risky proposition than it is in the United States?
It's a toss-up. I mean, it's...
Radio is still very much a very important news and information medium in those countries, and so much more so than the U.S., isn't it?
And in the state of Oaxaca, there's at least, by my count, 15 or 20 unsanctioned stations on the air,
mm-hmm.
and they get rated occasionally. In Mexico, it really depends on the state that you're in, and how corrupt the local government is, and how critical you are of the state governor or local officials, so forth and so on. So, it's much more of a personal thing there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil, interestingly enough, I mean, when supposedly the more progressive people got into power with the Lula government, actually they had more crackdowns on stations. We don't quite understand that one, but there's this whole kind of, separation between the different bureaucracies. So,
mm-hmm.
Maybe they haven't gotten the message yet. I mean, maybe they represent more of the reactionary people that were in there before that have sort of permanent position or whatever, sort of civil service position, I guess. Venezuela is very good. They've actually doing very much they can to encourage it because there's actually independent local media outlets that helped fight the coup against Chavez a few years ago, because all the big media are corporate-owned, and they're all anti-Chavez.
Mm-hmm. And you've been part of the free radio movement in North America for a fairly long time now,
yes.
If I'm not correct. And Free Radio Berkeley used to broadcast as a station there in Berkeley, California, and you very famously... met the FCC all the way up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals there in the mid-90s. What's your view of the movement these days here in the United States?
It's hard to say exactly. I mean, people are still putting stations on the air, and there's going to be too much of a slowdown. I mean, at any given moment, I would suspect there are hundreds of stations on the air. We never, the thing is, we never hear from people unless they have a problem with the equipment. So there's not really any way to accurately survey exactly what's going on.
But you're active in helping people build kits. Do you provide parts or plans to other broadcasters?
Well, we supply full kits of all the parts needed to build a particular item.
Mm-hmm.
Documentation, parts, everything, so people can basically buy the kits from us and go off and, if they have enough experience, assemble it on their own and put their station together.
But how many kits do you think you've sent out, in all these years there?
I really wouldn't have a count on that, but it's just, we don't really have an audit.
Sure, right.
At all.
I can understand that. And do you counter any problems? I mean, either with the FCC or any other branch of any government with the making the kits and putting them together?
No, none.
Really, not at all. Because that alone, really, there's really nothing illegal about that, is there?
No, there's not. At least not right now. And of course, we're branching off into doing free TV as well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about your TV initiative.
Right. Well, basically, over the last year, we've been able to make it possible for people to do essentially the same thing. Previously, they've been doing on FM to do it on TV as well. Basically, we have put together a package that allows to set up a small station that can cover, depending on circumstances, but maybe 5 or 6 miles. And it's no more complicated. In fact, a little less complicated than the FM setups.
Yeah, I was paging through some of the details you put up on your website. And are you using commercially available transmitters or?
Well, we start with a commercially available unit called a modulator,
mm-hmm.
And it's basically a small transmitter. They use them for a cable system, and
those are freely available.
Oh yeah, that's easily available item. We provide them for people. We got them from a wholesale distributor, we can provide them, or people can get their own, whichever. And then we provide an amplifier. It turns out that one of the manufacturers we work with came out with a new line of power modules, and they work directly with the modulators that we use. So we basically hook the modulator to the amplifier and get 25 or 30 watts out, run that to an antenna with a gain of 3 or so, and it gives you about 100-watt signal. You can take two amplifiers, drive them, and then run each one to a separate antenna, and that gives, because of the multiplying effect, it gives you actually effective gain will yield an effective power of about 400 watts.
Wow. Now, television requires a little bit more power than radio.
Oh, a lot more power.
Much broader bandwidth there.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you could cover quite an area. I guess my question is, why television? I mean, it seems like, compared to even a radio, fewer people watch broadcast television off the air than who listen to their radio off the air.
Well, there's just so much material out there that should be seen by people. I mean, all the documentaries will never see the light of day on any broadcast or most cable services. I mean, there's probably hundreds. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So that's one reason. There's so many people doing independent video these days. It's the only way that, I think their video is going to be able seen on any sort of, broadcast basis.
And what about with the digital TV transition as more and more sets are converted over to digital signals?
Well, that's going to be a long transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, urge people to hang on to their analog sets.
And I also wonder about, the anonymity, since, with radio, you're in front of a microphone, right? No one can really see you. But, do you envision people getting in front of cameras or?
Well, doing live production is a whole another kettle of fish.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, for the most part right now, people just could hook up a multi-disc or jukebox type DVD player and fill it full of DVDs and just let that run. You know, all kinds of good documentaries and programs, whatever.
Are you aware of any active unlicensed TV broadcasters right now in the country?
Yes, there's a station on in San Francisco on Channel 13.
And is it getting any attention from other broadcasters? Because I know that often the first people to find to complain about unlicensed radio is other radio broadcasters.
I've not heard anything. The only thing I've heard so far is that the San Francisco city council supervisors, whatever, actually they were contacted by that body and asked about if they could get programming on.
Okay. All right. Well, somebody's paying attention, and is this an expensive thing to get involved with the television?
No, not really. I mean, the modulators are about $150. The amplifier kits are about $150. You're looking, about all said and done, about $700-$800 worth of stuff.
It's a little bit more than the radio, but not a lot more.
It's in the same ballpark as the radio.
And so you do have your upcoming radio camp, and you are coming through the Midwest to Madison, Wisconsin, April 22nd to 25th, if that's correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you will have other dates to be announced, and that's on your website?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And are you also doing some camps in the Berkeley, Oakland area?
Right. We have our normal schedule here through the summer. Like once we have one in a few weeks here in April, then we move. I don't have my schedule right in front of me. But we'll all have one Labor Day, not Labor Day, I'm sorry, Memorial Day weekend, then 4th of July weekend, first weekend of August or so, the 5th, I believe.
The 5th through the 8th, yeah.
And then Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, okay. September 2nd through 5th.
And how can people sign up to get involved with any of these camps?
They can just basically go to our website and send us an email to register, or they can call our phone number, which is 510-625-0314.
Is there a cost associated?
Yes. The workshop fee is a sliding scale, $150 to $200.
Okay. And your website is freeradio.org.
Right.
Stephen, thank you very much for your time and telling us more about Free Radio Berkeley, your radio camps, and the new unlicensed TV initiative.
Great. Thank you very much.
And once again, that is Stephen Dunifer, who is the originator of Free Radio Berkeley. And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots independent media and a critical look at our media environment. We'll be back in just a moment with some Media Geek news headlines. Do stay tuned. Here on Media Geek, we try to bring you news of our media environment that typically get left out of our electronic media or relegated to the back business pages of the print media if it's covered at all. Because we believe that news about the media industry, media law, regulation are all stories about democracy and not just business. Here's a little bit of what's going on in our media environment this week. The battle over indecency on satellite and cable broadcasts is heating up, with competing bills hitting Congress to either impose indecency standards and fines on cable and satellite or to continue exempting these media. Senate Commerce Committee Chair Ted Stevens is joining his compatriot from the House, Joe Barton, to draft legislation imposing on cable and satellite the same indecency restrictions that currently exist for over-the-air broadcast television and radio. Stevens has offered a deal to the cable industry to back off if it were to offer more family-themed programming packages and to self-regulate. But at the same time, Senators Kay Bailey Hutchinson and Jay Rockefeller have offered their own version of a cable and satellite indecency bill. Heading up the opposition is Independent Representative Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Sanders is sponsoring legislation clarifying that the FCC's authority to regulate programming for indecency applies only to broadcast television and radio, not cable, satellite, or the internet. Sanders told reporters, quote, "There's a growing culture of censorship in this country that needs to be stopped. Government commissars should not be the arbiters of what Americans see and hear," end quote. New FCC Chair Kevin Martin would disagree with Sanders, as he has come out in support of extending indecency restrictions. However, Martin's predecessor, Michael Powell, has publicly stated his opposition to regulating indecency on cable and satellite, saying that he believes any such regulation would not survive constitutional scrutiny. Indeed, the constitutional legitimacy of regulating indecency on broadcast television and radio is premised on the unique prevalence of broadcast media, its accessibility to children, and the relative scarcity of broadcast spectrum. The proliferation of channels on cable and satellite, combined with effective channel blocking and filtering technologies, may provide a tough constitutional challenge to regulating indecent content outside of broadcast. And one of former FCC Chair Michael Powell's chief lieutenants has landed at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. As head of the Commission's Media Bureau, Ken Faree helped Powell draft the 2003 rewrite of media ownership regulation that would have lifted restraints on the cross-ownership of newspapers, TV, and radio stations. Those loosened ownership regs were struck down and sent back to the FCC by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals last year. Faree will be the new chief operating officer of the CPB, the organization that oversees the federal funding of public broadcasting in the U.S. While at the FCC, he backed a plan that would have allowed the government to reclaim analog broadcast spectrum earlier than the current digital TV switch deadline. The CPB is funding a large percentage of public TV stations switching to digital TV broadcasting. Jeff Chester of the Center for Digital Democracy suggests Faree's appointment is an indicator that the CPB is taking a turn to the right. Chester told Broadcasting and Cable, quote, "Since Faree's ideological zeal led to the largest public revolt in FCC history, this will no doubt harm public broadcasting further, even if it brings them better GOP relations," end quote.
And according to a report in Broadcasting and Cable magazine, the recently appointed FCC Chairman Kevin Martin has ordered all FCC staff not to release any information to the public without his prior approval. He's also made it clear that he wants staff to be familiar with his thoughts on key issues. Now, Martin sent out this email expressing these ideas to senior FCC staff on March 18th, which Broadcasting and Cable presumably has caught downwind. The email was not published in the article, but only a few quotes were mentioned. So we'll have to get more details about Chairman Martin as he starts to develop his character as the chair
of the
FCC.
Well, that's definitely more of a Bush administration style to kind of put the lockdown and to make sure that the commission moves more in lockstep. And certainly under Powell, the commission did not necessarily move in lockstep. And certainly Martin led part of the troops away from Powell's program at times, in as much as he often joined Powell with regard to issues like media deregulation, which he was all for. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.